T-minus 10, 9, 8, 7, 6, 5. All three engines up and burning. 2, 1, 0, and lift off.
Coach on Fire Radio.
I am the
Okay, welcome everyone. Rob B. Lowe here, host of the Inside Your Superhero talk show, coming to you today live. And we are the creators and founders of the Success Superpowers, which is all about creating for you your mindset that never quits. And today I'm having so much fun on my show because I get to meet, and I guess this is what radio is all about, and interviewing guests, because you get to meet people who've got something always very unique to bring to the world. And my guest today is certainly one of those people that has something very unique to bring to the world. Welcome, Pat, and thank you very much for joining me.
Oh, my pleasure. Awesome to be here. Thank you.
So, Pat, you and I have had a chance to have a conversation before the show, and I was really enlightened and really sparked up to hear that you've come up with a process and a platform that is just so unique, and yet so simple and so wonderful. When I was thinking about it, I'm just going, well, it's just beautifully breathtaking what you're taking people through. And it's something that I think we're all gifted in life to do, but often we forget that it can bring such great emotion and great positivity in our life by looking at that aspect of our personality and our emotions. So I'm going to be quiet for a little while because I want everybody to enjoy your, I think, can we start with a little bit of your backstory, Pat, about how did you arrive at being Pat the Joyologist?
Sure. I was a registered nurse for 16 years and then had 11 years in advertising. And at the turn of the century, over a four-year period, had a series of losses. I lost my home and my business twice, relocated from Australia to New Zealand, owed $80,000, which I repaid in a two-year period. My family weren't speaking at that time, so I suffered a lot of loneliness around that. Mm-hmm. I had cancer, and I'm a survivor, as you can see.
Well done.
I lost my first child, a daughter. And then when I arrived in New Zealand, the first 18 months that I was there, I had 10 car accidents. They were all about 6 weeks apart. Wow. None my fault, honest.
And you still drive today, Pat?
I do. No accidents since.
Wow. So it's fair to say you've had your share of adversity by the sounds of it.
Yeah. Then... at the height of that, as things seemed to be, you know, settling down and back to some normality, my partner of 20 years left with another woman. And for me, that was the straw that broke the camel's back, as they say. Mm-hmm. I was okay for a month or two, and then I really plummeted. I was in a pretty bad space. Saw my doctor, and she wanted to medicate me, and rightly or wrongly, I chose not to be medicated and went looking for another way.
Good for you. That's a great story in itself, that one. Just that perfect, that one line there is, don't always accept what other experts tell you. You know, you got to make the decisions for yourself. And I love that about you, Pat. Well done. Sorry.
Thank you.
I just think that's a great message to share with people listening is don't always accept. Always seek, you know, seek the truth that serves yourself. Don't just accept what someone else is telling you. It might be that what they're telling you is the thing that you need to do, but don't always just accept it first up, you know.
No. You've
got to look harder.
Not at first value.
Yeah.
So as happens when we, you know, when we make choices, something else always comes into our path. So it wasn't long before I discovered there was a grieving seminar being conducted at Starship Hospital, the children's hospital, for parents who had lost their children. And I had lost a child, my daughter, and I thought, oh, this is perfect. The doctor had worked with Elizabeth Kubler-Ross, whom you may have heard of, And I went to this seminar, and 2-hour seminar, and my life was changed, number one, by the energy and the grief that was in that room. 400 people, you can just imagine. And especially the couple that I sat immediately next to. Too long to share my story, the detail of that. But suffice to say, I left that seminar very moved. By that experience and connection with so much anguish. And within a couple of hours was talking to a magician in South Australia who had me laughing my head off. He wasn't telling me any jokes. He was only telling me about laughter yoga.
Yeah. And that's interesting. I've got to ask what laughter yoga is, and I know you're going to get there for me, but yeah.
It's actually the fun you're having when you're not really having fun.
Okay.
So it's a bit like Clayton's.
Okay. So
in the middle of that conversation, there was just a lull. And in that lull, there was, you know, where was the message from my higher self? Not sure, but it just came in, oh, my God, we've got radiology, pathology, hematology, but no joyology.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to be a joyologist. So at that point, I had no idea what that meant or how it might roll out, but I knew it was profound.
Yep.
So I went and learned laughter yoga. That was the beginning of the journey. I did 2 pilot programs in aged care over a 15-month period. And it was through that journey and process, dealing with my own grief, but also developing something with others. It wasn't a clinical trial, so there's only anecdotal evidence, but there was sufficient evidence from that 15-month period to let me know I've got a really solid foundation here for something.
Yep.
There were 29 residents in this facility, and their lives were changed as a result of laughter yoga, so having fun when they weren't having fun.
Yep.
And tapping into their individual intelligences and their signature strengths. So the work of Martin Seligman and what's the other fellow's name? Doesn't matter. Groundbreaking work. No one would ever have done anything like that, assessing elderly people in that fashion.
Yep.
And ran out what I believe was the most diverse and varied activities program in aged care probably ever. I called it the world's first joyology department, and residents from there went on to achieve a world record in the Guinness Book of Records for laughing continuously for 1 hour.
Wow.
And in essence,
that's amazing.
What happened for them was they took their power back.
Yep.
It was a great rest home. There was nothing wrong with the facility.
Yep.
But they were passive recipients of whatever you want to do. And through humour and playfulness, tapping into strengths they didn't know they had, they reconnected to their personalities and started to make fun of their infirmities and their living circumstances. So from there, that gave me this base.
So I've got to ask, though, I really need to know the answer to this question. And I think if my audience are listening, they're probably going to be thinking, come on, Rob, ask that question. What is this yoga that you speak of? What did you call it again?
Laughter yoga.
Laughter yoga. What? Come on, spill. What's laughter yoga?
It was created in 1995 by Dr. Madan Kataria, an Indian doctor.
Yeah.
He had been using some yogic practices in his medicine, but he decided he wanted to give something back to community. So he made up these laughter exercises and went out into the street and invited people to participate with him in these pretend laughter exercises.
Mm-hmm.
And it's evolved now. There are over 4,000 mm-hmm. Laughter clubs around the world.
Wow.
Many people trained in anything up to a 4-day stress management program.
Yep.
So, and it's based on, I guess, a simple premise is that whether we pretend to laugh or laugh for real,
mm-hmm.
the mechanics are there. So the brain doesn't know the difference.
Mm-hmm.
So endorphins yep. are released. You get a feel-good effect.
Mm-hmm.
So its application, especially in the area of mental health, I think yep. is still to be realised.
Okay.
Because there are a lot of people who go, oh, it's a bit woo-woo for us.
I guess
so, you know, at its basis, it has, you know, one simple exercise is to go ho, ho, ha, ha, ha.
Yep.
But there's clapping, and then there are now hundreds of
variations, yeah.
Variations and exercises.
I guess if you're in a group of people, probably if you're encouraging people to fake laugh, like actually bring it on, I can kind of see how that would become about laughing at yourself about having to fake laugh.
Absolutely.
You know, it would, in a group, would it, can, is it fair to say that it would get fairly infectious?
Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. The if you watch, I've got a 5-year-old grandson, and, you know, he will see or think or feel something, and I have no idea what's happened, but suddenly he's laughing, yeah. right? So there's something there. So that inner playfulness and sense for fun
yep.
Is there from a very, very early age. But we're over the years taught to be polite and tone ourselves down and be
correct.
Good
yeah.
and be conservative. Yeah. And
be politically correct.
Yeah. And so we've lost some of that.
Mm.
So what, you know, my experience with the pilot was, they did a half-hour workout every day at 10:30.
Mm-hmm.
And so they learnt through repetition, they learnt these different exercises.
Yep.
Once they'd got into the groove of it, they started doing it after I'd gone.
Yeah.
They would do it with each other. They'd be on their walkers up the corridor and they'd be saying various, you know, ho, ho to each other. So their demeanour was lifted. They
yep.
were kind of reconnected again at another level
yep.
back into what is this passing parade that's my life. And then they were able to see and react to the ridiculousness of how things work. Like, you never get your own laundry back
yep.
in a rest home, often get someone else's. And so they would start doing that on purpose. They'd go to the laundry and get Thelma's big long john underwear and put it in their little basket in their walker and take it to lunch
yep.
and then, you know, hold them up and say, who's this? And, of course, think they're terribly naughty
yep.
For doing that and be in peals of laughter.
Yeah. Sounds like my boarding school days. That happened in our boarding school laundry as well. You never get your own laundry back. You'd always
yeah.
end up with someone else's, no matter how hard they tried. So where have you taken the joyology to, I guess, into have you taken into business and organisations, Pat? Is that where you work
yeah.
now?
I realised in the beginning I developed a stress management program and took it into the health sector, very much based on the notion that you are here to bring joy,
yep.
not just into your own life but into the lives of others.
Mm-hmm.
And there's an umbrella of, you know, methodology underneath that. And it was really to demonstrate to people. I gave a lot of talks in the beginning to people with chronic pain,
yep.
Arthritis, chronic fatigue, fibromyalgia, all of yep. those painful, debilitating conditions. Probably gave hundreds of talks into there and just saw the, you know, my some methodology plus my natural capacity to be an imp and be mischievous. And
yep.
to do what no one else will do. So that's
yep.
what humour does. It yanks you off the path.
Okay.
And so, you know, to break the boundaries and, mm-hmm. and have them go, what did she say? Yep. Because yep. they can't quite believe. Did she say that? Did she say yep. that?
How dare you? How dare you say that?
And then I quickly realised health was not going to I was working part-time and doing this part-time. Health was not going to fill my coffers. They didn't have the budget. And so I started developing programs to go into the business sector. Mm-hmm. That was a very tough road, fairly conservative in New Zealand. And, you know, when I'd get the cold calls, the typical response would be, look, I'm sure you're a lovely lady, Pat, but we have fun Friday after work. Yeah?
Yeah. You can't have fun during work.
Oh. You know, yeah. I persevered. I ran the Humour in Business Awards in New Zealand yep. for 3 or 4 years as a very high-profile way of really getting people to look at the notion of what it means to be good-humoured. And for me, to be good-humoured is about being appropriately responsive or not.
Okay.
But you've got to understand the difference.
Yep.
You know, you can't lead in with inappropriate humour, but mm-hmm. once you have relationship, then you might be able to go there.
Yep.
You know, but not until you've got relationship.
But it's all a perception, isn't it, Pat? I mean, what one perceives as inappropriate is completely different to another. So I
think
you're hitting the nail on the head there. It's yep. rapport to begin with. And I find that humorous in people, just the fact that they find things inappropriate because they're so conditioned in their perceptions about life, and they're just, it's been a bit stuck in the mud in the old terms in my book, you know. If you can't have a good laugh at yourself, you know, we've said this for years, decades in our lives, if you can't have a good laugh at yourself, then, well, you know, go and find a corner to hide in, because, you know, life is about joy and having fun, and that's what you're bringing to it. And if you can't, you know, if you can't have a joke, wow, what is the point? You know, where else do you go? Mm. So, yeah, that I mean, that's a great conversation to have another time, that level of appropriateness about behaviour, because, you know, we've just been conditioned to be so restricted in what we do because I might hurt Pat's feelings. But what about my own feelings? You know, I'm not saying act with complete disregard for the health of people, but you should be able to just be yourself. And if you don't like that yeah. person, then don't hang around with them.
Yeah.
If you have to hang around with them, then let them know that you don't like the way that they behave, instead of hiding behind some policy in a workplace or some level of bureaucracy and causing more harm than that person ever did with their one inappropriate comment, and all of a sudden it's bang, blown up into a major issue that this person's got to be disciplined. Oh, it's just, yeah, it destroys me where that's why I don't work in corporates anymore. I left that in 2015. Is I just couldn't, my headspace just wasn't allowing me to see any sense there. And it just drove me insane. I was losing my fun. That's it. Thanks for making that me aware of that. I lost my fun.
Yeah. I remember I was, with one company that I worked with in the early years, and I was reading them some Anthony Robbins, and the HR person came and stood at the back of the room, and she said, what do you think you're doing, Pat? And I said, oh, well, we're actually up to a page 176, Anthony Robbins, Awaken the Power Within. And she said, see me in my office. So off I went at the end of my session. And she said to me, Pat Armitstead, if you want to get on in this country, you better tone yourself down, girl.
Oh, was that just like the red flag to the bull?
Absolutely.
I got to charge on now. You probably may have even said to yourself, I think I just found what I'm meant to be doing. And it feels good.
Yeah.
Awesome. Now, listen, there's a couple of things I really wanted to make sure we got through with the audience today, and is, I'm a big advocate of talking about authenticity and being congruent, and it's something I know you're passionate about as well. And just tell me, how has that came up? How have you got through almost like allow people to flower their authenticity through joyful through your Joyful program, your Joyology.
See, when all of those losses happen, essentially I disintegrated. So, you know, in another person's world, people might have called it in the past a nervous breakdown.
Yep.
But because I made a commitment at the outset, whatever comes up, I'm going to go to it.
Mm-hmm.
I started to see paradox and synchronicity side by side, and I saw challenge, but I also saw support. So yep. There was this heightened perception and awareness. I might have been aware of that before, but gosh, I was aware of it now.
Yep.
And then along that journey, perhaps about 2002, I became part of the Virtues Group.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the Virtues practices is, for me, it has taught me to be more of an observer rather than a judger.
Yeah,
and right. It's a very simple and easy process to do that. I examined in the first couple of years the major wounds of my life.
Mm-hmm.
And made art of them.
Yep.
And as I did so, appreciated how they no longer were stored in my body.
Yep.
Then in this reintegration, I started to see things like I could actually still love and hold a really high love for my ex,
yep.
whether he was there or not.
Okay.
The family who weren't speaking, I tried to mend things for many years and it didn't happen.
Yep.
And I came to a place of, it's like, well, I can love you anyway.
Okay.
And I really got into that.
So just on that, I just want to interject there.
Yeah.
So this is how you've arrived at your level of authenticity. And how do you think other people can apply maybe what you've learned, what would you say to other people, you know, to allow them to see, you know, using your mindset as a process, how would you describe that to other people if they wanted to go through something similar, if they really resonated with you, how would you guide them, Pat?
I probably would, I'd be looking to measure their multiple intelligences, because
mm-hmm.
we honor sport and academia, but we don't honour the others. We don't honour practical intelligence, spiritual, mm-hmm. emotional, interpersonal, intrapersonal.
Mm-hmm.
So I would want to measure that. And then I would use Martin Seligman's work and measure their signature strengths.
Yep.
And then I would be harnessing those and integrating those into their pathway forward.
Okay.
Because even if we're not in the relationship of our dreams, not in the job, but, you know, but we're there because we need the money.
Mm-hmm.
When we take all of us to work, all of us into every encounter, like
yep.
our uniqueness, then by merit of that, as we show up more and more authentically, we have to mm-hmm. learn. it is a process. Then life becomes pretty amazing because you're behaving as you want to behave, mm-hmm. you're speaking as you wish to be heard,
mm-hmm.
and you're saying what you need to say without denigrating or denying anyone yep. else's, you know, beliefs or perceptions.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I'm really focused now. One of my programs, I'm developing transformational speakers.
Cool.
And you can't be one of those unless you've done really
been one of those. One person that's transformed.
Yeah. Managed your grief and loss.
Yep.
Or, you know, whatever life has served. And are we ever over it? Probably not.
No.
But we need to be able to demonstrate the healing because yep. then we're in a cleaner space
mm-hmm.
to be able to authentically support. We're not caught up in our story anymore.
Mm.
The story's valuable and no denying it, but we're not our story anymore.
Yep.
We're, you know, we've evolved, we've changed. And I use the monarch butterfly as my symbol.
Yep.
know, the monarch is constantly evolving.
Mm-hmm.
And it actually has, over a year, four different cycles that it goes through.
Yep.
So it's like, for goodness sake, really? like, they don't live to be a year long, but each period when they're, you know, dying off and being, you know, being reborn, and the constituents that are in the cocoon are exactly the same constituents that's in the butterfly that emerges.
Yeah.
But the two are actually unrecognizable.
Yep. It's amazing, isn't it? Yeah.
That's one of the things I use in my work. We do some, in one of the programs, use plaster of Paris and make castings of body parts.
Yep.
And, you know, I really emphasize at the outset, remember this image. This is a 6-inch roll of plaster of Paris bandage.
Yep.
And what we're going to end up with is totally unrecognizable.
Yeah.
So, but it's the same constituents.
Yeah. Okay, so very powerful. Yeah.
Yes.
So I like that. I like the butterfly analogy. What I like most about what you've just said, though, is the part about showing up, and it's something that I can definitely resonate with, because it's something that, as a mindset coach, I have long conversations with people about, and it is. I just call it. It's just the universe being the universe, because when you decide that you want to show up as who you really are, it responds to you in the way that you've always sought it to respond. And that, to me, I have no explanation of how or why that happens, but it just does. And it's very hard to convey that to people, Pat. And I thank you for sharing that with the audience today, because you've shared it in another way that might resonate with people that, I think I've said it already on this show about pretty much, in essence, what you're saying about showing up, but I've said it in different ways and so have my other guests. So it's great that we're continuing that synergy in this show about that inside the superhero, that superhero really is the authentic person screaming sometimes to get out, you know, but just didn't really know how to make that all happen for themselves. So
yeah, as work started to grow for me, especially in the business sector, I've now done well over 600 keynotes, well as working in business, Auckland University for 10 years. But at one point, I'd been counting the feedback, and I have over 5,000 testimonials.
Wow.
And two things in relation to that. For a time, I sought them. So I needed that external validation.
Yep.
And that's okay, because I reached a point where I no longer needed to count. Yep. And because I realized it was never enough.
Mm-hmm.
You know, to keep looking to the external was never enough.
Yep.
So only I could be responsible for that inner well-being.
Yep.
And be aware that it's not all peaches and cream.
No, I mean, that's beautiful. And so often people do it. They measure their success by how they're validated by others, not really how they're validated by themselves. And I think, you know, if you found a process for yourself to do that, that's wonderful. It's something that I know personally. I self-coach myself on a lot. Is that rejection that we have, that's a part of our life when something doesn't go as, I don't even live with expectations, but when it doesn't go even just how you may have planned it or how may you even imagined it, you don't expect it, it's just an imagination. Managing that and self-validating yourself that you're on the right path, that you just stick to your guns and, you know, you're still listening and being aware of what other people are, how they're responding to you, but sometimes you really have to be a self-validator. Now, to tidy up the conversation, I would love for you to share this really cool project that you're about to launch or are launching. I can't remember what stage.
Yeah.
but just tell people what's going on, because I think there's going to be some people who listen to this, Pat, who are going to go, I want a bit of joyology in my life. And you're doing something which is going to allow people to get access to that quite easily, aren't you?
Mm. I made a 20-year plan in 2004. and I'm still fulfilling on some of those. One of those was that I would own the Laughter Channel for Southeast Asia. And so the possibility has come to fruition in this last 6 months. I've written season one of a program called The Laughter Channel.
Yep.
Subheading, where human interest meets humor interest.
Yep.
So it's very not cool. just about comedy, although there will be comedians and it will have funny moments. And, you know, I want to impact on this emotional flatlining that I see. I want to impact on suicide rates. I want to impact on incidents of depression.
Yep.
And, you know, support people to be fully self-expressed.
Yep.
And to do it, to achieve that in their own lifetime. So we'll be, everything's ready to roll. Patch Adams has agreed to be patron. He'll be one of my first guests. And when we've completed the 13 episodes, they'll be airing on Aurora Foxtel.
Yep.
Awesome. And so that'll be season one. You need 13 episodes to get up on that platform. And I have a bigger vision for where it might go from that point.
Awesome.
But I think I need those 13 episodes to be a demonstration of what's possible.
If someone was interested in this project and wanted to follow it, how would they do that, Pat?
They can connect with me on Facebook, or they can go onto the probably easiest is go onto the Joyology website and sign up for my newsletter or send me an email.
Yep.
That's joyology.co.nz.
Yep.
Haven't changed it over to an Australian.
That's all right. We're all the same country anyway. We'll make sure too, just so the audience knows, we'll make sure we put those links in the bottom of our program replay and that, so people can find them easily enough. But I've got to say, I'm looking forward to seeing what the outcome of that is. I'm looking forward to finding somewhere in my schedule, maybe towards the end of this year, where if Pat's running a workshop somewhere that's close to me, I'm getting along and to experience a bit of geology myself. I am truly interested in it. And I believe with all my heart that a lot of our listeners are probably interested in it, because I can honestly say I'd never heard of it. I'm the knower of know everything, but I do keep my ear to the ground very well. But I think, you know, if we're looking to really explore that part of our emotion, which I encourage everyone to do, then I think what you're developing up, what you're sharing with the world, Pat, is 100% required. Kind of mandatory kind of stuff, because we may have all got a bit dull, boring and grey over time. So I thank you for your time, and I do want to give you 30 seconds at the end just to say something that is very meaningful to you that you want to share with every human being out there.
Yeah, lovely. I had the privilege yesterday of being filmed for a laughter documentary.
Yep.
A chap from Paris has been travelling the world doing that. And one of the things I shared with him was I've studied acting and a lot of improv acting this last 17 years. And I said to him, we can't all live a life in the performing arts, but we can all live a life enhanced by them. And so, you know, when we look at creative expression in all its forms, even if we think I can't sing, I can't act, I can't dance, whatever, there'll be aspects of that that bring us great joy. And, you know, we need to parcel it in. That needs to be part of the plan.
Awesome.
We need to make a date with ourselves.
Yes. Very cool. I think that is a great note to end on. And on behalf of my audience, Pat, I just want to thank you for your time today, for your wisdom, your knowledge, and for your joy, of course, that you have brought to our show.
Thank you.
It's
been awesome.
And a very interesting perspective on how to find one's authenticity through, I guess, laughter. And that's pretty cool, I think. I really like that. This has been Rob B. Lowe, the founder, creator of Success Superpowers, signing off the Inside Your Superhero show for this week. We will be back in a couple of weeks' time with another another very cool guest. I've got some interesting people coming up. I've got one guy too. I just want to drop a quick promo for him. I've got one guy who is actually in the Australian beach handball team. Now, I didn't even know that existed. To me, it sounded a little bit like Dodgeball, the movie. But I'm really looking forward to having that conversation with this guest in the future to find out what is beach handball for one and how do you represent that at a national level in Australia. So thank you very much, Pat. Thank you, all listeners. We'll be in touch again very soon. And whatever it is that you're doing out there, always be present in life and don't let that mindset quit. Bye for now.
Thank you.
I can do anything. I can reach any goal today. I can do what I want. I can be what I want to be.
Coach on Fire Radio.